From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. In 2012, Dr. Joyce Michael Flynn wrote a book about people like her who had survived trauma. She mapped out the similar steps that each person had taken to be able to return to a state of thriving. And she launched a model of rehabilitation that she calls MetaHab. Since our conversation that year, Dr. Michael Flynn has been teaching extensively, and she just finished the first season of a new podcast titled Sliver of Hope. She came back to the studio recently to update us on MetaHab and to talk more about her own story.
So in July of 1990, I died and had 22 minutes of CPR to come back to life. And at that time, obviously, life changed dramatically for me. And things looked pretty grim and pretty dark at the time, but with the help of many people, with grit and just a belief in a future, I started crawling my way out of this ditch, this hole, and started moving forward. And things didn't get better overnight. They got better over time. And so this is now my 29th year of surviving that event.
29 years ago, your heart stopped. It stopped for a little over 13 minutes, if I remember right. You were swimming in a pool at the time. You sank to the bottom of the pool. When we spoke in 2012, you had no memory of any of that. Has any of the memory come back?
No. There's literally at least 2, maybe 3 weeks of my life I have zero memory of. I don't remember being hospitalized, nothing.
Do you still experience any physical or cognitive effects from that incident?
Actually, I don't. I feel stronger. I learned so much about brain injuries, and physical injuries, and what to do. And as I'm moving into my 65th year of life, it's really made me think about, well, you need to take care of your brain. And so I actually think I'm in better shape in many ways than I was. So, yeah.
You're talking about brain injury because during the time of the incident, your brain was deprived of some oxygen.
Right. Yeah, I had tremendous aphasia. So I could articulate words, but I couldn't remember anything. In fact, their story is when they first brought my children into the hospital room after I'd been out of ICU and asked me, did I know who they were? I remembered looking at them thinking, I know I'm associated with them. I just don't know how, or my husband the same way. So there was a tremendous amount of that. And again, I could articulate, but I couldn't word find. So if I wanted to do, like my husband one time asked me, can I get you something? And I said, yeah, I'd love a, and I wanted an orange, but I couldn't say the word orange. So I said, I want something that you peel and it's juicy and it has vitamin C in it, and he had all that. And so after a while, at the behest of some physicians, went to speech therapy, and they really dealt with that quite a bit. And it took a while to get all that back. So,
but you did get all of that back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is that the brain compensating for what had happened, or the actual repair and recovery of the part of the brain that had been damaged?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. So in part of my recovery, 2 years after, I did go back and get a master's, and then later on, I went back and got my doctorate. And I am a professor at Sac State, and one of the courses I teach is a very beginning course in neuroscience. And in learning, I just learned, as I'm teaching this course, you learn so much about it. And I learned the notion of plasticity. So the brain is very plastic. It can mold, it can change, it can rewire itself, but it can only do that if you push it. And I didn't realize at the time what I was doing was really pushing my brain to build these alternate pathways and to become plastic. And that's what happened. There's probably parts of my brain that are gone, but I have rerouted and done things differently.
You're listening to Dr. Joyce Michael Flynn. The book she wrote about her experience and the experience of others, by the way, is titled Turning Tragedy into Triumph. Out of that episode in your life, and this is after years of recovery,
But you devised what you call metahabilitation. It's a right. curriculum around recovery from trauma. Will you say more about that word, metahabilitation, and what it means?
So metahabilitation is a word that I coined, and it means going above and beyond restoration. And I thought about this, and I coined this word because I could not only see it in myself, but other people, that they had gone through significantly traumatic events. And not only did they survive, but they actually thrived. Hmm. And not in spite of what happened, but as a direct result. So it drove me further into doctoral work. And I studied people who'd gone through extreme events and listened to their stories. And it is in their stories they told me how they accomplished that. And I could see patterns around that. So I devised a clinical pathway to achieve that.
This is a very good place for us to jump into talking about your podcast, because in each of the stages of the curriculum you developed, you give an example, you give stories. And so stage one is acute recovery.
Right.
And what are the hallmarks of this stage?
People are just in shock. What am I going to do? Where should I go? What's this going to mean? And so you have to work with them at that stage and say, I want you to take a deep breath. Life's changed. Do not look too far in the future. Let's get you through today and get you through tomorrow and get you through next. This is where we're going to go. I don't want you to go into this. What is this going to mean? You're not there yet.
Your guest in the podcast episode for this stage one is a personal and professional friend. His wife, who had been a colleague of yours, suffered a horrific tragedy.
Yeah.
Let's listen to a little bit of the podcast.
I just put my head down in my hands and I wailed, but like without crying. I feel like that was, you know, felt like an hour, right? It was probably 10 minutes. But I thought as soon as I left would pull my head up, open my eyes, that we would see her. And it's like we were unpunked, right? Like this was right. just not real. It was going to be completely, it was just like, this is a joke, guys. Like what a terrible, terrible joke. But it wasn't, it was absolutely real.
Just for a little bit of background, Dr. Jennifer Gonzalez Shushriba and her unborn daughter were shot and killed in March, as we're saying, of 2018. The shooting happened at a building called the Pathway Home in Yountville, California. This is on the U.S. Veterans Affairs campus. In the episode, TJ talks with you about tiny details. He says he's not going to chew gum anymore. Because mm-hmm. he chewed gum on the day that she died. He says he's learning to meditate every day. He doesn't yes. know if it helps, but he's doing it. He even talks about flossing his teeth, very small details. So you really get the sense, I think, of how the process is, not only day by day, but what happens every 90 seconds, or what happens at 11:35 every day, or whatever the moment is.
Right. And in those times, you know, will bring you back to, well, at this time, I was doing this, and this happened. At this time, I was doing this, and this happened. And I have to tell you, Beth, in a lot of ways, that I don't think that ever really goes away. I think your body consciously puts that there. You learn how to live with it. You learn how to use this event as something that can make you bigger, better, and more insightful about life. But even now, it's so funny. At this time of year, for me, this has been 29 years, I still kind of feel odd around this time. I just feel off, you know, physically, emotionally. So I can imagine TJ, that part, I think, and I'm so glad you brought this up, because I think people need to know that stuff won't go away. But you learn how to manage it. You learn how to use it. It becomes something that's not taking you away from the thought of that person. It engages you with that. And I think that's a really important part, because people go, well, I need to get over that. And I say, no, you're never going to get over it, but you can learn how to use it.
TJ talks about a metaphor that he uses. about being in a car, and I thought it would be worthwhile to listen to that. So here is his description from the podcast.
Look, I'm driving a car, right? And I cannot see out the front windshield. All I have is a rearview mirror, and I can see the mile markers behind me. Mm-hmm. All right. And I will go back to the fact that I'm a pragmatic and logical guy, and I want a roadmap. I want measure of progress and how I'm doing this. And this type of situation, this acute situation, mm-hmm. right, is something that I'm never going to have a roadmap for. There's no way to describe how I'm going to go ahead and make it. There's no way to say, oh, okay, you got to take the right turn here. No, I can't see where I'm going. I have no idea what that looks like.
Why is that a right metaphor?
Well, first of all, it's right because he picked it. It's right for him. So that's number one. People pick and choose what makes meaning to them. Number two, it's right because life is going to come at you. We can build resilience. We can build grit. We can have these things that we can bring forward when life comes at us. But you cannot be prepared for something like what TJ, right. Jennifer, and her family went through. Mm-hmm. So what TJ is alluding to, in the places you've been before, you recognize those, you're comfortable with those, you have those. You need to go back and use those to help you maneuver this new landscape, this I don't know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, and the way he describes it, it's also showing him that he is moving forward, which says, I don't have a sense of where I am or what's happening, but I see things behind me that continue to show me
that
I'm moving somewhere.
Somewhere. And again, this is, as you alluded to, this is why this is so perfect for first stage, his story as Horp, because you realize he's still challenged and working this out with himself.
I don't really know how he had this conversation with you
at
the 1 year mark.
It was so brave of him to do that. And I just acknowledge that. And part of it, though, too, Beth, he told me, first of all, you don't say no to Joyce Michael Flynn. And number two, he said, which I thought was really sweet. And number two, he said, I need to do this.
What do you know now about the recovery? I'll use the phrase that you use, guiding survivors toward growth after trauma. Mm-hmm. What do you understand about it now that you had a sense of at the beginning, but we're just evolving into? What's clear to you now?
Well, what's 100% clear to me now is it happens. It happens all the time. And the thing that is the most gratifying, there's so many things gratifying about the work I do. But I think the thing that is most gratifying is to help people understand that they have it in them. When I'm working with groups and we'll go through these stages, or I also develop what I call characteristics or facilitating conditions that promote post-traumatic growth, I'll have people check off what they have. And they'll say, oh, do you want me to check off what I don't have? I go, no, I can do nothing with that. I want you to check off what you have. And they start checking off and, well, I'm this way. Well, I'm optimistic. Well, and so I look at them and it's so amazing, Beth, to look at them and say, see, I have taught you nothing. It's in you. All I have done is unearth what is already in you. Now let's keep moving with that, you know, that direction. I think that's probably one of the most amazing things is their awareness. They become aware of their strength and capacity.
If you are just joining us, you are listening to Dr. Joyce Michael Flynn. We will post a link with our original conversation from 2012. We are now getting an update not only on her coursework, her teaching, and there is a podcast called Sliver of Hope, but I'd like to bring this full circle and get the full update on where you are, because Chapter 9 in the book is titled The Meta-Habilitated Survivor. And I guess that's the category you would have been in, but it seems that you've gone beyond that now.
Well, this work I do, you know, let me tell you, there's ups and downs to this. I have been pushing. I had this conversation with some colleagues the other day that since I finished my doctorate in 2007, I have been pushing a rock up a hill saying to people, you know, there's something to people going through horrible things, and I'm not minimizing that pain. It is painful. But do you notice some of the comebacks? Do you notice this resilience? And as I talk about this grit, and people just were not interested in listening to that. So I just kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And I know what has kept me going is the individual survivors and their families hear me and they go, I want this. I want this.
Congratulations on all you've accomplished in the last 7 years since we spoke. And in the almost 30 years of your new life. And does your life feel divided in that way? Life before the accident and life since?
Well, that is such a great question. Beth, nobody's asked that question to me. I don't know if there's so much a before and after, but there's definitely a presence that I have. Like, I'm going to get emotional, but that I really do recognize I have today. And I think the thing that drives me is I was given 29 years. How many people get that? Seriously, when you look at 29 years, and I didn't want to waste my time. It is with other people I talk to. I'm not the only one that does this, but I will tell you one thing that I hear when I'm hearing somebody's story, and I know they got it. I know they're going to be okay. And that one word or that notion is purpose. When people find a reason to get up in the morning, take a shower, and get out the door, they're going to be okay. It's not going to happen right, but they're going to be okay. And I don't care if that's a dog you got. I don't care if it's a new job. I don't care if it's a grandchild, whatever. They find purpose. And my purpose is this. And there's so many times I've like, I can't do this anymore, because you do get a lot of doors shut in your face. And you do get a lot of people who are naysayers. And you do get, but then I get down. I just don't stay down. I try, you know, something will happen, or I'll say a prayer or whatever, and something will come back. My husband and I were very fortunate. We were able to take all our children and our grandchildren, which I have five and one on the way. And we were on this wonderful trip, actually, in Italy. And there's a darling picture I have of my five grandchildren. And I happened recently to run into two of the physicians who resuscitated me. And I pulled my picture up on my phone and I just showed him this picture. And I said, this is what you gave me. This is what you did for me. It was like, so anyway, sorry, get emotional, but it, I think I just, the afterwards is I try and keep a positive, productive, purposeful, intentional mindset around things I do and people I'm with. So, and a loving, I try to be a really loving presence. And so, if that's what came out of that bad thing, well, God bless.
Dr. Joyce Michael Flynn, her book is Turning Tragedy into Triumph. Her podcast is titled Sliver of Hope. She has an upcoming Women, Wellness, and Resilience Day on August 17th. You can find a link to more information about it on our website, as well as my original interview with Dr. Joyce Michael Flynn from 2012. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.